You've heard about VIP membership, you've thought about VIP membership, and now we're going to entice you to activate your VIP membership. Today, you can take $8 off a VIP membership. That brings our $9.99 monthly rate down to $1.99 for your first month, or apply it to our cheaper rates when you commit to 3 months or 1 year. That's $8 off with coupon code LIVECAST18. That's LIVECAST18, all one word, no space, LIVECAST18 in the coupon code box when you check out pwtorch.com/goVIP. What comes with the VIP membership? Well, first of all the PW Torch livecasts on one RSS feed that you can subscribe to, but as a VIP member, these plugs and similar plugs, along with the advertising and commercials, edited out of the show. So a streamlined experience. Plus, VIP after shows, exclusive post-show content just for VIP members. Also, VIP exclusive content that nobody else hears, the Wade Keller Hotline every single day that I put out, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin that I host, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables, including the Royal Rumble post-pay-per-view show recorded right after the Rumble that I host. Also, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop site, pwtorch.com becomes pwtorchvip.com for VIP members, ad-free access to everything on the site, and so much more. Did I mention 30-plus years of archives, retro radio shows going back to the early 1990s, thousands upon thousands of hours of podcasts on any topic you can imagine in professional wrestling from a top trusted team? Go check out our benefits. Over 70 exclusive podcasts, over 25 live casts with plugs and ads removed, an RSS feed that lets you sign up for shows by theme, by title, or all at once, whatever is convenient for you. And yes, it's compatible with popular podcast apps on Apple and Android. So go check out details. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP. Choose your subscription option, 1 month, 3 month, or 1 year, and then enter coupon code LIVECAST18 to take $8 off the price of your subscription. We are journalists. We are independent analysts. We are forever students of the game, working passionately to help you understand pro wrestling better and enjoy it on a different level than most fans by never stopping our own journey to learn and inquire and decipher everything going on in this fascinating genre. We are independent. We are unattached to and uncompromised by any affiliation with a pro wrestling company or dependence on cooperation with the companies we cover. So you can trust that what we're saying isn't hindered by conflicts of interest or fear of losing a current or future job in the industry. There's less hedging than you'll find elsewhere. You might have noticed that. No fanboy blind loyalty and no holding back. But we're also committed to fairness and exploring all sides of decisions that are made by promoters and wrestlers. So check out our complete coverage in print, text, and audio. pwtorch.com/goVIP. $8 off. A coupon awaits you. Act now before this offer expires. It's for a very limited time. The coupon code is LIVECAST18.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, February 12th, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined today by my tag team partner over at MMA Torch, Zach Haydorn. Zach, how are you doing today?
I am doing good, Robert. Glad to be here. Lots to discuss and it should be a good time.
And after his 1 week sabbatical for completely undisclosed reasons, we have the triumphant return of Sean Ennis to the podcast. Sean, I'm not going to ask you how you're doing because we all know how you're doing, but may I ask to give a live report, if you will, from your last week or so. How has life been?
Oh man, it's been kind of a blur. You know, the euphoria is still going strong at this point. It's a good time. I'm spending too much money on Super Bowl merchandise and spending too much time watching rewatching highlights. So it's good stuff.
Are you going to order a Super Bowl ring, or are you going to have your own replica ring?
I may not go that far, but if I had the money, you know, who knows?
Well, I'll say this. If you get a ring, that's much better than the Tools that spend like $500 for their replica belt that they wear to wrestling events and then are like drenched in sweat after the event. So at least the ring won't cause that much discomfort. So I'll give you that. All right, guys.
That would be a good advantage, yes.
Yeah. We've spent the better part of the last 4 weeks talking about football. We probably won't have any more breaking NFL news on this show for a while, but stay tuned. You never know. If you want to get in on the show, go ahead and give us a call. Our number is 515-605-9345. Once you dial that number, if you want to get on the air, just press 1 and I'll bring you on and we can get you on, hear your questions, get your comment, give your criticism of us. Any input is definitely welcome. If you don't want to call the show, if you want to send an email anytime, day or night. The inbox is always open and that address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Or, of course, the easiest and most direct way to get in touch with us is on Twitter. Just tweet at us at MMATorch. I'm watching that during the entire show. If you send something there, we'll read it back right away. And you can change the discussion of the show. You can steer the show in a different direction or comment on what we are talking about. All right, guys. Last week, me and Zach had a discussion where we seemed very underwhelmed by the pay-per-view that we were prepared to watch, UFC 221, which happened this past Saturday. However, coming out of that show, the names on it weren't very good, but the action itself seemed to be satisfying and seemed to make it nearly worthy of its price tag. Before we get into any of the specifics of any of the fights, I'll start with you, Zach. What were your overall impressions of the card?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I was, you know, especially given all that happened with the Romero Wade situation going into this pay-per-view, I was at like, you know, maybe an all-time low in terms of my excitement level for it. But boy, sitting back on Saturday night and watching what unfolded, yeah, the names weren't big, but the fights were fun. They were entertaining. I think there's some storylines to look at coming out of it. So all in all, it was a fun event, even without the big draws.
Sean, I know I actually want to get your take on this. I've been having fun with you and all your Eagles fandom as of lately, but you're coming off of seeing such a exciting sporting event and being so emotionally involved. How would you, you know, you obviously won't have the emotional investment in UFC 221, but was it something to get you up in this post-football landscape that we'll be in for the next couple of months?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I kind of had a similar reaction that you guys did. Before the show started, I was kind of like, eh, whatever. You know, I was looking forward to Rockhold Romero, but other than that, not a lot was grabbing my attention with this card. But it ended up being pretty decent, I would say. You know, not an all-timer, but another one of those cards where you're not too bullish going in, but coming out of it, you say, okay, that was pretty good.
And Romero versus Rockhold, there were a ton of storylines before, after, and during the fight. We'll just go in chronological order, of course, on the day of the fight. Yoel Romero does not make weight. He comes in heavy. He was given a little bit of extra time, but that didn't matter. So we basically had a whole day on Friday where we didn't know if the main event in any form was going to take shape. Ariel Helwani was reporting on it throughout the day, you know, saying that Rockhold wanted a big piece of Romero's purse. He ended up getting that 30%, but it really wasn't until the middle of the night here in America where the fight was finalized. And the ultimate concession, much like UFC 206, only the person that made weight could win the title. So Luke Rockhold, had he won the fight, would be the new interim middleweight champion. But of course, as the middleweight division always seems to break in every which way direction, other than the most logical way that it probably should break and that the UFC wants it to break, Yoel Romero, with a very dominating performance, getting the stoppage and looking great, looking like Yoel Romero once again after Robert Whittaker really was able to neutralize him and to tire him out a few months ago. Here we had the third round stoppage that Romero got, but it was fun to see such a devastating knockout, but of course it's anticlimactic because he doesn't win any title, and it was weird to see a UFC event without, you know, Dana standing behind the winner and putting the belt on him. With that said, let's talk about the fight. Sean, what did you think of the fight overall? Were you impressed by how Romero looked? Were you concerned about Rockhold? What were your impressions?
I'm less concerned about Rockhold than I am impressed with Romero at this point. I mean, I think there has to be at least some lingering concern there with his chin after being kind of knocked out by Bisping, even though he didn't take Bisping very seriously, I don't think, going into that fight. But, you know, Yoel Romero, especially in the third round. I mean, third round, Yoel Romero, you almost can't beat him. He came in there and just, I mean, the shot that he landed that put Rockhold on the mat was that was enough to take out a horse. You know, that would have knocked out most guys. You know, and I should know, being someone that's seen people punch horses in the face. You know, but it was an impressive shot, and then the follow up as well. You know, kind of would have blasted a lot of people into the moon. So, I mean, if you look at it, I'm looking at Romero's record here, and in his last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 fights, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 third round stoppages. I mean, that's insane. You know, that's just crazy. And, you know, he tended to, it seems like he just tends to find his rhythm around that time for whatever reason. And he did it again here. So I do think that, you know, Rockhold says he wants to go to maybe 205. You know, that may be a good move for him, but it may not be. You know, I don't think there's any real answers to be had with Rockhold here until his next fight. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. You know, this is a guy that I thought was going to rule the middleweight division with Iron Fist, you know, for as long as he wanted to. So this is kind of an interesting development here. You know, I still wouldn't mind seeing him fight Robert Whittaker at some point. But anyway, all that aside, I think I am more impressed with Romero than I am worried for Rockhold. Long answer, or to make a short answer long.
Yeah, and you talk about chin, and I think there are legitimate questions, but I think they stem more from the Bisping fight still than if you get hit by Yoel Romero, I don't care who you are, nobody's going to have a great chin with that kind of power coming toward you.
Yeah.
So there is that. One more thing, Sean. We did talk about the weight issues. How much do you feel – I feel every week when someone makes weight, we talk about how dominating their victory was. Is this a pattern that we really need to just get away from, where a fighter that misses weight fights?
Maybe when it's – I think when it's a pound like it was with Romero, it's not as big a deal as it was a couple of weeks ago when you got a guy – and I can't even remember the names anymore of the guys that are missing weight. But when he missed weight by like 5 pounds, you know, I think that's a different situation. With Romero just coming in a pound overweight, I feel like it's more of a disadvantage to Romero, quite honestly. I mean, to go back in and try to cut weight again and try to get down to 185, you know, I thought that was more of a disadvantage to him than an advantage for him to go into that fight a little bit heavy. You know, I think at the end of the day, it wasn't going to make that big of a difference or make him really bigger at all than Rockhold if he was. You know, if not a little bit, then bigger at all. So, yeah, I do think in some situations it's worth looking into whether the fight should be made. But in this particular case, I didn't think it made that big of a difference.
And I think it should be noted, I felt Romero looked actually quite a bit smaller in this fight than he has in some of his recent fights. So I don't know if he just didn't bulk up as much after the fact, after the weight cut. But I thought he did look a slight bit tinier than he generally looks. Zach, were you at any point in fear that there wouldn't be a main event to this card as the day of Friday wore on?
Yeah, I was. I it was one of those situations where it's like, I didn't want the main event to be canceled, but looking at how everything unfolded, you know, it just was so unfortunate with him not making weight and the excitement of that fight going away with him not going for the interim title. I think on the surface, when those situations happen, I totally side with fighters who just come out and say, hey, look, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm not interested. You know, that's not the fight I signed up for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On Friday, when the news broke that Rockhold was looking to take a significant portion of Romero's purse, then I thought it was a pretty good chance that the fight would get done. You know, money talks in a lot of different ways. And as soon as they started throwing that stipulation around, I was a little bit more confident that the fight would happen. On the surface, though, I typically don't like seeing fights like that. It just feels like the whole thing is off to me. But look, hey, if you're going to be able to cash in and get a 30% bigger purse than you were originally for only a 1 pound difference, it's a foolish errand not to take that deal.
Yeah, and you knew you were assured of one thing, that Rockhold was not going to get at the short end of the stick in this situation. He's not a guy that ever seems to be in a position to just take one for the team and do it for the fans. And I know sometimes he seems like he's got a bit of a curmudgeon-y attitude, but I think he actually has the right mindset in a lot of ways, and that he doesn't want the UFC to just run him over like they've done to so many fighters in the past. As far as the fight goes, Zach, did you feel that Rockhold was a step slower? Or was this just Yoel Romero being Yoel Romero?
No, I think Romero looked really, really good in that fight, and he typically does look really, really good in most. That's the part to me that was concerning about Rockhold's performance in it. Throughout the entire thing, he just looked lackadaisical and slow and didn't really have much of anything on the offensive side of things to throw Romero off his game. He didn't go for too many takedowns. He didn't try to stand up and lay in some shots face to face. He really had a very, very defensive mindset. And that was the part that was most concerning for me. Like, you knew that Romero was going to go in there and be what he is and fight the fight that he fights. And I don't think Rockhold had a good game plan to defend that. And once that third round hit, he was exposed. I think he almost was tired himself for being on the defensive for the first two rounds. And, you know, it hurt him, and he got caught with something huge. So I really thought he was underprepared, not smart in the way he approached the fight, and really just was kind of dull in there on Saturday night.
And he looked like that in his previous fight, too, against Branch. So there may be a bit of a pattern building and a bit of a profile building with him. Now, after the fight, it looked like, as in intra-middleweight title fight tradition, that Yoel Romero had broken his leg. That was the consensus coming out of fight night. However, the next day, reports seemed to circulate that he believes he's okay and he's good to go very soon. Dana White has intimated that Yoel Romero will get the next title shot at Robert Whittaker. Romero is in this weird place as the uncrowned interim middleweight champion, I guess. Sean, is it the right call to give Romero the next title shot?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, like I said, I don't think that the weight was as big a deal as it can be in situations like this. Especially, I don't often put a lot of weight into what Dana White says, but you know, he had a good point with Romero taking this fight on relatively short notice and, you know, not being able to get to weight in time. I think I'm a little bit more forgiving in this particular case than I normally would be in a title fight. So, yeah, I think that's it's probably the right call.
Zach, are you in agreement with Sean? Should Romero get the next shot?
Yeah, I am in agreement with that. And for all the same reasons that Sean pointed out, I think missing weight, it was unfortunate, and I don't think it's certainly something that Romero is going to have to watch going into that fight, because he's not going to want to be on the end of this again in terms of missing weight at 185. But look, I mean, in the interim title fight, he won the match and won the fight in dominant fashion. That says something, and I don't think that can be overlooked when you're looking at Whitaker's next opponent.
I asked,
and the other part of that too is, I mean, what is an interim title other than a cut to the front of the line for a number one contender? So, you know, just not having the belt doesn't mean as much as it would in the case of a normal title fight too.
Well, in this case, I think in middleweight right now, with Robert Whittaker as the undisputed champion, the interim title means a lot, because that means you probably get a title shot very soon. There's some other divisions where it means that they needed to make a main event. But I think at middleweight, it has more of a purity to what the original idea of an interim title actually is. And then there's other cases where you have the champs who just disappear, and if you're the interim guy, like Whittaker was, you just become the undisputed champion. So the middleweight division, for all its follies, if you will, over the last year and a half, 2 years, is going back, regressing to what it should have been this whole time. And when you look at the list of top contenders, it's a little weird because outside of Romero, and you can even say this about Romero because he did lose to Whitaker, the top five all has stuff working against them. You have Kevin Gastelum, and these are according to the UFC rankings, Kevin Gastelum, who's got the weight issues, and he's got the recent loss to Weidman. You got Chris Weidman, who is like campaigning as hard as can be for this title shot, but of course he has a series of losses where he just recently got back on track. You have Jacare, who lost to Whitaker in the title eliminator. Jacare looked very good in his most recent fight. And then you have Rockhold, who probably won't get a shot in the near future. So these are all very intriguing fights and tasty matchups, but there is some negative stain to all these guys, so somebody's going to have to get the shot. And Romero, I think it'd be hard to say that he's not at the front of that line, so he gets the shot. I wonder what it would be like if we live in a world where Yoel Romero is the undisputed middleweight interim champion. That will definitely be some interesting times for sure. Now, with the whole Romero situation, him getting a title shot, that was our poll this week put up on Twitter. The poll simply asked, should Yoel Romero receive the next middleweight title shot? 53% of you said yes, 47% said no. So lean slightly in the favor that he should get the title shot. And to me, this just comes down to, well, then who's the alternative? Like, maybe he's not the super most deserving guy, but like as I just read off those top five, there's not a guy in there that's a clear-cut contender, but it's a good situation that if Whitaker stays active, I think we're finally going to get this division that we've wanted for the last 2 years. You know, aside from Gegard Mousasi, who was sort of the tragic figure of the weekend on Twitter, I thought everybody tweeting about, well, it's a shame that the UFC didn't re-sign him. He was the one guy that people really want to see in this mix that, unfortunately, he went to Bellator, and he's not going to be in this mix. All right, guys, let's talk about the co-main event. Mark Hunt dropped a unanimous decision to Curtis Blaydes, and a bit of a shocker, I think, not in terms of odds, but obviously Hunt is the sentimental favorite. He's been there a long time, and he had Blaydes rocked early. Sean, were you at all surprised at how this turned out?
I was only surprised after seeing the first round. I thought that this might be the way the fight went when it was announced that the Blaydes might get some takedowns and kind of ride Hunt out for the last couple of rounds. But man, he took some hellacious shots in that first round. And with him not going down and being able to collect his wits that quickly, that was surprising to me. But the result in itself, not all that shocking.
No, and Zach mentioned this on Twitter when he was running the Torch account during the fight. Like, it was the Brock Lesnar game plan. You just got to get inside of those heavy hands and then basically lay on the guy for the entirety of the fight, and that works well, because who the heck would want to stand there and trade with Mark Hunt? I mean, we saw earlier in the fight how bad that could have gone for him. Zach, were you at all surprised in how this turned out?
A little bit, just like Sean said, after that first round. I mean, after that first round, I was like, whoa, I mean, Blaydes is, he's got to be in a bad way, because he was rocked there for a little bit. And I think had he gone down, it would have been over for him. The big story to me is just that, come Sunday morning, Mark Hunt had to have been looking in the mirror going, my goodness, how did I not finish him after that first round? Because once the first round ended and the finish didn't happen, that's when I got a little worried for Blaydes, because I thought that the fight would revert back to more of what I was expecting, which was a pretty solid and dominant performance from Blaydes, which is what went down. So it was one of those things where, Hunt had to get the job done early. He had to get the job done with a swift, 1-2 punch of some kind, like he's known for. And that's how he was going to win that fight. As soon as I didn't even think he would get the opportunity to throw those kinds of punches and to land them. But once he did, and it wasn't effective in ending the fight, I really felt that it was over for him, and he was going to have a hard time winning.
This leaves us in a really interesting place with Curtis Blaydes, because he's a guy that very low profile, but has a fairly decent record. We talk about, he's lost to Francis Ngannou. There's no shame in that. He is going to shoot up the rankings, and people are seemingly talking about him getting the title shot in the near future. I don't think that's super far off, but I think he's going to have to wait a while. Obviously, we have to wait till the summer where Stipe faces Daniel Cormier. And I think that result, the result of that fight will be key to how soon Curtis Blaydes may eventually get a title shot. With if Cormier is installed as the champion, you know, he may retire and everything may have to be reset, or he may defend for a while. And in that case, Cormier hasn't necessarily cleaned out the division in the same way that Stipe has. So if I'm Curtis Blaydes, I'm probably rooting for Stipe in that fight, but that's such a long way away. I think we're going to have to get comfortable with him being higher up in the rankings, but it's heavyweight, and anything can happen in heavyweight, and things change and somehow simultaneously stay the same all the time in the heavyweight division. So I think he will be just fine. The bigger takeaway seemed to be Mark Hunt, who obviously has a lot of baggage with the UFC at this point. He's still involved in an active lawsuit against them regarding UFC 200 and his belief that they knowingly still scheduled him to fight Brock Lesnar after to his contention, Brock Lesnar failed two drug tests and the UFC had knowledge of it. Mark Hunt is been pulled from a fight recently because of comments he made in a Players Tribune type of article where he expressed concerns that he may be suffering from the early onset of CTE. He expressed before this fight that he wants to fight out the rest of his contract and then fight somewhere else for another couple of years. Now, Mark Hunt is not a young man by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, he is the oldest member of the UFC roster. Still a very effective fighter, despite what we saw this weekend, but he's a guy that's very long in the tooth, taking a lot of shots at the age of 43 years old. Sean, is it the right decision for him to finish out this contract, but still has two fights left on it, and then go fight in another organization?
I mean, I always try to stay away from saying what a fighter should or shouldn't do with their career. That being said, were it me, you know, I have a hard time thinking that I would want to keep fighting after the career that Mark Hunt has had at 43 years old. And his case is just so strange, you know, after coming over from Pride, the way it has gone for Mark Hunt, I don't think anyone would have predicted. It's just very odd, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. Obviously, it's his personal decision. I don't know why it makes sense for him to keep fighting at this point or what he's trying to accomplish other than, you know, whether he just loves to fight and wants to keep doing it.
And it seems obviously Bellator is going to sign him. I don't think there's any question about that. When he's done, Bellator will bring him in. But it seems like he may have missed his moment in Bellator, because if he would have been part of this heavyweight Grand Prix, especially with his history with tournaments, both, you know, K1 and in Pride, that he'd be the perfect guy to be an anchor for that tournament. So it's a bit like he missed his moment there. Zach, are you worried about seeing how this is going to all end for Mark Hunt in the next couple of years?
Yeah, in a way I am. And look, I'm not one to tell fighters when they should hang it up. But I feel like as a analyst and fan of the sport, I can say whether or not I'm interested in watching certain fighters fight or not. And at this point, there's just nothing left for me to see or be interested in terms of Mark Hunt. It's hard to watch more than it is entertaining to watch, because, you know, with every shot that he takes, it's like you know all these health problems that he's having right now. And it's like I don't want to watch him compound those by fighting more fights. It's just that's not entertaining to me. Look, I understand the fact that, look, a lot of these fighters are going to have these symptoms down the road. That's part of the deal. But it's different when you publicly talk about them and when you publicly tell the world that what you're going through, and then turn around and ask that same public to shell out $70 to watch it all happen. Something just doesn't sit right with me on that. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is, I don't know what Mark Hunt has left to prove. I mean, he's had a really, really nice career. He's made a boatload of money for himself. I think, sometimes it's just time to hang it up, enjoy the fruits of your labor, enjoy the wonderful career that you've had, be, you know, a pioneer or an ambassador for the sport that he helped build, and just kind of move on with it all. That's where my head's at. I have no interest in watching him fight again.
And it's hard to say if he's had a sharp physical decline, even at his advanced age, because he's kind of famously always been the 500 fighter, that he'll win one, he'll lose one. He had that bit of that career resurgence back like 2011, 2012 era. But it's hard to say if he's up or if he's down. And I have, like, he'll probably split those his final two fights in the UFC, which you would think would make it even harder to convince him to hang up the gloves once and for all. So it's definitely something to watch, and definitely something that, it's one of those fights that when you watch, there's a certain uncomfortableness as time goes on and more we learn about what MMA actually does to the body. You know, pure MMA, not the MMA that we see now. Not, you know, pure martial arts. They take their toll too, but not to the level, obviously, of the headhunting that goes on in the highest level of mixed martial arts. And it can be uncomfortable just knowing that in the back of your mind of what he's doing to himself while knowing he is being hopefully compensated well. It's going to be tough to watch. I agree with you. But like you said, he's a grown adult man, a very grown adult man, more grown an adult male than anyone else in the company. So he is making these decisions, and hopefully he makes the decisions that are right for him and for his family. All right, guys, we got to go to break. But first, we got Valentine's Day coming up this weekend. This Wednesday. Gee, I better get on that knowing when that's going to happen, because if I don't know what's going on, I'm not going to have to worry about Valentine's Day next year, that's for sure. But you're going to have to go all out for Valentine's Day. Zach, are you going to have to just, you know, pull, you know, set it up? I can't think of a superlative here. Are you gonna bring it for Valentine's Day, Zach?
I am gonna have to, absolutely. Look, I'm a newlywed, married in middle of September of last year, so this is the first married Valentine's Day for me. So I absolutely have to go all out. You know, I'm still looking for ideas. Okay, so if you got them, send them my way.
Well, sir, time is running out on you, but you better do well. I mean, come on, we all got to do well. We all put our significant others through a $65 experience on a pay-per-view that we didn't think was going to be very good. We all had to sacrifice our Saturday night last weekend. So you got to go out all out on Valentine's Day. There's that. But once Valentine's Day is over, then maybe you could treat ourselves again. And it would be a great way to treat yourself. It'd be with Wink. That's right. W-I-N-C, Wink. What Wink does, it just makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized just for you, and shipped right to your door, they start at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. You know, for a lot of people, the 14th is going to be the best day of their month this month, but maybe your Wink day next month, that'll be the best day of your month. What you got to do, just fill out Wink's palette profile quiz and answer some simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or wouldn't think would translate that into a selection. You know, the guy at the liquor store, he's giving out those little flowers at the front of the cash register that you get at the last minute. He's not going to know what kind of wine you're really interested in based on your taste, based on questions like how do you like your coffee or how do you feel about blueberries. Then Wink, they send wines curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. Each month, there's new delicious wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. No membership fees, you can skip it any month, and you can cancel at any time. You're the one in control over here. And, even better, the shipping is covered. If you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's right, TWRWINC.com/PWTorch for $20 off. You know, PW Torch, you get a lot for being a fan of PW Torch. You're even going to get a discount on your Wink. That's trywink.com/PWTorch. All right, guys, let's go to the first break. And when we come back, we got a caller on hold.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Don't forget, if you want to give us a call, come on the air and talk to us, just dial 515-605-9345 or send us an email, mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALIVE CAST@gmail.com. Let's get on our first caller of the day. Skype, you are on the air.
Hey guys, it's Valentin from
Russia. Valentin, a few weeks no here, man. I was wondering where you had been. I'm happy to see you're doing all right. What do you got for us today?
Well, my question for today is, do you follow professional kickboxing, and do you think it can grow in popularity?
Sean, what's your interest level in kickboxing?
Kickboxing has always been tough for me. For some reason, it never has really connected with me the same way that MMA has. And I don't know why that is. I've enjoyed like the highlights that I've seen a lot of times with like Glory and stuff like that. But it hasn't really struck the same chord with me that MMA has. Do I think it can catch on in popularity? I think it's possible. I think it's all dependent on the way it's promoted and presented and things like that, and how it's made available and all that good stuff. But for me, it hasn't really resonated. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it hasn't done so thus far.
Zach, what's your take on kickboxing?
Yeah, same kind of opinion as Sean. I definitely think it's something that could certainly be marketable. I think there's enough, fight fans here all around the world that could be interested in it. For me personally, I found it hard to connect for a couple reasons, but the main one being I find it difficult to follow, in terms of, how to dive into that product for the very first time. Is it a big star? Is it a big company? I think it's pretty splintered as far as the sport goes. And I think if they shore that up a bit, that's how they'll grow the popularity. But at this point in time, the entry point into that sport for me is hard to find.
I think I'm a little more negative on it maybe than you guys are. I love the idea of kickboxing. It sounds like a great thing. But whenever I watch it, like I said, I don't mind the highlights. And sometimes kickboxing gets on television quite a bit here in America. It'll be on ESPN fairly regularly. And obviously Bellator gets their kickboxing on. So I think it would be great. And then I watch it and I'm just not as into it as I think I'm going to be every time I watch it. And I give it several chances. And for me, it just doesn't resonate quite as well. Maybe that there hasn't been a big star, but it's not like they haven't tried in the past. Specifically, late 80s, early 90s, kind of pre-MMA, pre-UFC era, there was a push to get kickboxing going, and there were some famous martial artists back here in America that they put as the face to it, even if they weren't big fighters. You had Don Wilson, Joe Louis, Bill Wallace, those people who were big names in the traditional martial arts world who kind of put their names to kickboxing, and it still never really took off the way that boxing did or the way that MMA did. And in its current form, I think MMA kind of would ruin it for people because you have gloved combat with full, boxing gloves. I don't believe that they're not always as thick as the actual boxing gloves, but you can see a guy like a Mark Hunt in MMA just smoke a guy. And when you see a guy hitting perhaps with the same amount of power in kickboxing, it doesn't have that same effect. So now we've been sensitized to that. And it's amazing that it hasn't caught on, because every time I'm ever watching MMA with people that don't really like it, their criticism is, oh, I don't like it when they go to the ground and they just lay there. I wish they just stood up and threw punches and kicks at each other. But then if you show those same people a kickboxing match, they wouldn't really care for that as much either. I think the idea of MMA and the fear of the takedown and the fear of the submission specialist gives an added drama to it that kickboxing for the last 30 years just hasn't been able to capitalize on. What else you got for us, Valentin?
That's all I have for the day.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week, hopefully. It's good to hear from you again, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Valentin drops off. Don't forget to give us a call. That leaves a line open for you at 515-605-9345. I would really like to deep dive into kickboxing one day, especially there's a bunch of it on UFC Fight Pass. That's something I would like to get into. I just have never taken enough time to truly do it. Todd Martin spoke about it on The Fix, and he gave much more specifics onto why it hasn't taken off. That probably about a month or so ago, I would recommend going to check that out. And he gives a very good analysis of what has kind of gone wrong with kickboxing over the years, specifically in Japan. All right, 814, I believe this is Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, is that you?
Yes, it is.
What do you got for us today?
First question for you is, there's a wrestler on the independent scene named Chris Gaten that does MMA, and he sometimes does the drop kick during MMA fights. Is there any other unusual moves that you see fighters do that are pro wrestling related, such as like maybe an enziguri kick or maybe a Frankenstein?
And I have seen a highlight clip of what you're talking about. And if you YouTube different wrestling moves in MMA contexts, you can usually find them somewhere. There's a lot of stuff that people have tried. There was even that Walls of Jericho that was going around the internet about 6 months or so ago. Right. So those things do exist, but you rarely see that type of thing in the higher levels of MMA. I think there's just enough defense to those type of things. And I'm not saying that the other person has to cooperate with what you're doing for them to be effective, but there's a ton of setup in those type of things. Someone who's really trained at head movement and dodging punches and kicks would really be able to telegraph a drop kick thrown by most people. Sean, what's your take on the more outlandish wrestling moves being used in MMA?
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit it there. Was that there's a lot of cooperation that goes into some of the big highlight reel moves. I mean, the most applicable thing that we've seen in MMA would be that there's been a couple of kicks that kind of resemble the sweet chin music from Shawn Michaels. But other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot out there. You know, you're not going to see a lot of guys doing like an enziguri. You know, that takes way too much cooperation to do something like that. You know, you have to imagine a guy standing there for the amount of time that it would take someone to do a handstand and then flip their legs up on top of their head. And it's just not a thing that's going to happen. You know, if someone is that out of it, they're just going to be down. So there's that. I mean, some stuff might happen by happenstance, but you're not going to see a lot of planned moves that are going to be that effective that look like pro wrestling moves.
And the sweet chin music, as Eric Bischoff famously said, it's just a poorly done sidekick. So that is a move that is used in mixed martial arts. So it can happen. I think the tide tends to go the other way, where you see pro wrestlers who watch MMA. Undertaker's probably been the most famous example of this, when he incorporated a go-go plata into his offense, where you take elements of MMA and then incorporate them into a pro wrestling style where you slow it down and make it a little more visual. It doesn't go so well the other ways. Zach, do you have any famous examples of wrestling moves being used in the MMA context?
You took mine. The Chris Jericho one, Walls of Jericho, is the first thing that popped into my head as somebody that I remember seeing and going, what the heck is that? But I think, you know, for the most part, look, I think if you're looking to land a pro wrestling move in an MMA fight, I think there's something wrong with your fight game for the most part. Sure, on accident, it may happen here or there, just like Sean said, to the happenstance. But if it's something you're planning on doing or something that you think that, hey, okay, this Stone Cold Stunner is going to help me win this fight, I think you have a lot of problems on your hands.
I mean, I would personally love to see someone try a Styles Clash within the context of an MMA fight. I think, though, if you want to take the coolest move ever done from fiction, it's got to be the Showtime Kick by Anthony Pettis. That's more Street Fighter than pro wrestling. But him just jumping on the cage and kicking Benson Henderson in the head, that's a all-time MMA highlight. Another one, to go down the YouTube rabbit hole, look at cartwheel kicks that have actually landed, and it is it's never going to happen in the UFC, but it is entertaining to see someone do a cartwheel and knock another guy out. That is some good time spent on the YouTube. What else you got for us, Ryan?
My second question is on Ronda Rousey. You think she'll take a page out of Ken Shamrock and do a Lion's Den match sometime down the road?
I really don't, because right now there's so little of a blurring of the lines in some respects between pro wrestling and MMA that I don't think pro wrestling or the WWE wants to market the fact that they have a pseudo UFC fight on their hands in a worked environment. They seem to want to differentiate it a lot, and maybe that's one of the features of their product they want to present that as, is we have this different thing than MMA. Back in 98, when you have Shamrock doing the Lion's Den and the dungeon match, I can't remember what the name of the dungeon match exactly was. If you didn't know any better, you might think that that was a legitimate shoot fight going on and it had elements, and we weren't so exposed to MMA. At that point, the UFC was something that was in the sports section of your local video store that you went and got. So seeing that cage was really something else. I don't think they would do it, but it's definitely going to be an interesting aesthetic if she's ever in a cage match, because it's just going to look weird to see her in the, so to speak, her natural environment. I know that was something that I think TNA, whenever they would incorporate MMA into their presentation, it did look kind of cool, because it looked like they were in a UFC setting for like the lockdown pay-per-views, especially when they did Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle. That was really that classic thing of making it seem as real as possible while still being in a work pro wrestling environment. Do you see a Lion's Den match in the future, Zach?
No, I really don't. I mean, look, with the WWE, I don't take anything off the table outright, so never say never. But at this point, you know, the WWE is not, you know, living in a 1998-1999 world. I mean, for one simple fact is I don't think they're going to put Ronda Rousey in a UFC-type cage on their own pay-per-view event. I mean, that's some real nice free marketing and free promotion for the UFC, and something that they certainly would work to take advantage of. I'm not sure Vince McMahon sees UFC as a huge competitor, but there's only so many dollars for that fans have to go around. And if you feature essentially a UFC cage on a pay-per-view with the UFC's former biggest star, I don't think that's going to have the exact effect that they'd be looking for. In addition to that, you know, Ronda Rousey is a pro wrestler now, and I think they need to define her as that and showcase her as that. I think if you put her inside a match like the Lion's Den, it's almost like she can't get away from her past. She can't get away from mixed martial arts. She can't get away from the UFC. So she needs to be positioned as a top female professional wrestler and not an MMA fighter. And the way to do that is to get her in the ring and not inside a Lion's Den cage.
One thing I would say that would be interesting to use Rousey with, even if it wasn't the Lion's Den per se, a cool thing they did is they sold out two buildings that night of SummerSlam 1998. They had the regular wrestling arena, and then they had the building that Shamrock and Owen did the Lion's Den match in. And I think with a star as big as Rousey, that's something that they may explore in the future with multiple venues. Obviously, it kind of worked a little weird with Raw 25. But if you were to put a Rousey match in a different building in the same town, you could potentially sell out multiple venues. Sean, do you think we see a return of a Lion's Den concept?
No, I don't. I think you guys pretty much nailed it. And I think if you're looking for a template of what to expect with Ronda Rousey, or what you might expect with Ronda Rousey, I think you're going to be I think it's going to be a lot closer to Brock Lesnar than Ken Shamrock.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. And one thing, it would be curious, and I don't think this would happen, but if another female high-profile mixed martial artist came to the WWE during Rousey's tenure, would they book something there to blur the lines? Jim Cornette has talked about this a lot in the past, and if you watch a bunch of the 1998 WWF around that Lion's Den era, they had a plan to book Severn Shamrock 3 in the WWF, and this is the time when they're doing the Brawl for All and all that, and to really make people wonder, well, is this a work or is this a shoot? But again, this is a totally different era. This isn't the era where you're reading the Observer every week, and in the Japanese section, they have to put the little asterisks on what's a work and what's a shoot. So it's just a different time period. So I don't think that's going to happen. What else you got for us, Ryan?
Yeah, my final question is on the UFC gloves. Do you ever see them getting rid of them? Because there's a lot of eye pokes, and a lot of people apparently have lost some eyesight because of the gloves.
I sure hope so. That's something that Bellator seems to have taken the lead on, and people who fight in both organizations always make note of that, how much easier it is to make a fist and keep a fist in a Bellator glove. So I really hope they do so. The UFC glove is a big part of the identity. But even we saw this weekend, eye gouges are a huge part of what happens on every UFC fight. And as soon as the eye gouge happens, to me, the fight's always a little bit tainted because you don't know what could have happened without the eye gouge. What are your thoughts on that, Sean?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they probably will at some point modify them. At least you would think so. I mean, Joe Rogan's been all over this for how many years about the glove design. you would think that at some point they're gonna change it. It's hard to say one way or the other definitively.
Zach, is the marketability of that UFC glove that's been around for almost 20 years now, is that too big for them to part with?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they do. That is a major part of the brand for some strange reason. But I think they can make whatever the next glove entity is in that company, they can easily transition that and make that glove a part of the brand. I think you guys are 100%. I think they will make the change, and it's just simply to better the fighters and to make life better for them. And I think that's a good thing.
Ryan, call us again next week, man.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Take my call.
All right, Ryan drops off. Let's go to a break real quick on Time for a Change, and when we come back, we'll talk about the updated UFC 222 card.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Last week, Zach and I were on this show. We had no idea what was going to happen with UFC 222. We even discussed the possibility of the card being canceled. But in the following days, they have put together at least a somewhat passable pay-per-view card in the modern 2018 context. The fight between Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega is in fact going to happen. That will be the co-main event, and I guess it will essentially serve as a featherweight title eliminator. But the main event was Chris Cyborg. She'll be coming back to the Octagon in what seemed to be a very quick turnaround given her normal issues they have getting her into the Octagon. She's going to take on Yana Kunitskaya. I hope I got that right. I had it in my head, and then it just fell off the rails very quickly. But she is the Invicta bantamweight champion, be moving over to take on Cyborg. Should Cyborg receive praise, Sean, for saving this pay-per-view, or should she receive some criticism for who her opponent is?
I don't think you can criticize Cyborg for taking a fight, regardless of who they put in front of her. Although I don't know that you can. I mean, there's always some level of she should get some praise for jumping in on short notice to take a fight. I think her opponent should probably get more of the credit here, because this is obviously this is a match where she's going to be a heavy, heavy favorite. Cyborg is. And, this is a much taller order for her opponent, whose name I'm not going to try and say, than it is for Cyborg. So, yeah, props to both of them, much bigger props to her opponent. And, it's obviously a pretty big mismatch here.
Yeah, and more than anything, I think there's arguments on both sides of it. I'm never going to give someone credit for saving a pay-per-view, because I always say the fighter doesn't owe me anything, unless, of course, I bought tickets to the event in advance before the main event changed, or as they do recently, where they don't even have the main event announced and put tickets on sale. So I'm never going to really praise a fighter for saving a card. I think there's legitimate criticism. There always will be to Cyborg, because we've seen nobody at her competition level, so everybody seems like a mismatch. I mean, look how big of a mismatch it was between her and Holly Holm, and that was billed as this epic encounter of somebody that might be able to challenge Cyborg for a little bit, and we saw how that went. I agree with you, though. This is going to be such a mismatch, and it's kind of the story of Cyborg's career. I am happy, though, that it does seem to be that the relationship between Cyborg and the UFC has thawed, at least to the point that if she's available and they have a spot open, they can just book her, and there's not all these issues that always seem to follow on both sides, and both sides have plenty of missteps along the way. So I'm happy that that just seems to be behind us at this point, and we'll be able to enjoy Cyborg for what will be this really meaty prime of her career, where I kind of have a feeling she's going to be relatively active regardless of her opponent. She probably wants to get paid for all this time she spent not in the UFC and not fighting. Zach, praise or criticism for Cyborg in this situation?
Yeah, you know, to be completely frank, I don't really have either. I'm kind of right in the middle there. I think, you know, you certainly can't fault her for taking a fight that's put in front of her. She can only fight the fights that she gets offered. So on that regard, why wouldn't she take it, get paid, and assuming get a pretty easy victory? As for her opponent, though, I think it is such a mismatch where it's like, in a way, I'm not sure she saved anything, because I'm not sure people want to pay to just see her fight anybody. At least coming from me, I don't. I want to see, you know, a viable, good opponent for her, and this fight just doesn't have that. So that fight being on the card, as much as it's fun to watch Cyborg, that doesn't entice me to want to buy the pay-per-view any more than I would have if she wasn't on it. The fight just doesn't do anything for me, given who she's fighting. But on the flip side, like I said, you can't fault her for taking the fight that's put in front of her. So I'm lukewarm on the whole thing, but you know, I'm right there in the middle.
So then, with that said, and then kind of bringing in what Sean said about, you know, who her opponent's going to be and the sympathy he might have for her, is there a Cyborg fight at this point that you could headline a pay-per-view with and feel confident in that it would really drive interest?
I mean, I would like to see, I mean, look, I'm going to be, if you listen to the show long enough, you're going to call me out on talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I would like to see Cyborg against Nunes. I think that's a fun fight. I think that's something that piques my interest a little bit more, just because of the ability that we've seen in Nunes. We see what she brings to the table. We saw what she's done to Ronda Rousey. Yes, she's been very disappointing, had a disappointing 2017, but maybe it could be a fight like a Cyborg fight that really just kind of rejuvenizes her and gets her back on track. So that's a fight and a possibility that I see even for later on this year. At this point, though, looking out, that's the only opponent that really pops for me. I mean, even doing a home fight again just kind of has me rolling my eyes a little bit. So right now, it's kind of Nunes or bust in my mind.
Are you on that same wavelength, Sean?
Yeah, I am. And I have my doubts of whether even a fight with Nunes is going to drive interest. But if any fight is going to, I think it's probably that one. You know, we talk about this a lot with Cyborg, but, you know, I keep coming back to, there's not really a 145 division. It's just Cyborg against opponents, you know. So it's hard to have a fight that's going to drive a lot of interest when there's no build-up. There's no building of contenders in that division because the division doesn't really exist.
Yeah, I just feel it's always the case with Cyborg that there just are no easy answers. And part of that's a testament to how good she has been over the years, that we don't have a good opponent to take her on. And part of that is just in the way that the UFC has, in the post-Ronda Rousey era, hasn't really elevated a female star to that level where, at least on name recognition alone, you would want to see that fight. That they've tried the hardest, probably with Holly Holm, who has only won one fight since her defeat of Ronda Rousey, and Paige VanZant, who, I mean, obviously you're never going to have Paige VanZant versus Chris Cyborg. That is, if any athletic commission sanctioned that, they should be in prison, first of all. But even then, Paige has lost a lot of fights. So that's not something that's going to happen anytime soon. Let's look ahead to a fight this Sunday. You've got a holiday for some people on Monday. You got the Sunday night card. Pretty decent little fight night card coming out here. These fight night cards, we talked about this last week, they're kind of picking up steam, whereas the pay-per-views and the UFC on Fox cards seem to be trending negatively. In the co-main event, you have the recently unretired Derek Lewis taking on Marcin Tybura. Zach, how do you see this one shaking out?
This is a tough one. A tough one to really pick outright, but I like Derek Lewis in this one. I think, you know, he's back, and as I've said on the show before, I like, in a fight like this where I'm undecided in terms of, you know, fighter to fighter, you know, who could win in terms of just straight up skill level. When I'm undecided, I look to which fighter's fighting for more, and I really think he's got something to fight for here, and I think he's able to conjure that up and use it and eke out a victory.
it's difficult because both of these guys looked really bad in their previous fights. Derek Lewis had that awful performance against Mark Hunt where he looked like he just came in out of shape and Hunt exposed him. Marcin Tybura had that very tepid performance against Fabricio Werdum, who's really been on a tear lately, so it's hard to criticize him for that. I'm going to take Tybura in this fight. It wouldn't stun me if Lewis won. I feel like Lewis has been a little quiet on his social media game leading up to this, so I don't know if that works for or against him. But either way, I'm sure in the post-fight we'll hear something about Ronda Rousey, so at least there's that to look forward to. Sean, who do you got in this one?
I would take Derek Lewis as well. I would like to know, I'm going to do this with an asterisk, saying if Lewis's back is healthy, I think he takes this fight. You know, I think his back was in rough shape for a while. That's why he looked so bad in the last fight. I do think if he's healthy here, that he's going to take the fight. But it would not shock me if Tybura is able to pull something out here. But I think, like Zach said, Lewis has more to fight for, and I think Lewis is also harder to stop than Tybura would be. So I'm going to go with Lewis here.
And in the main event, we have the welterweight showdown between Donald Cowboy Cerrone taking on Yancy Medeiros. Now, on paper, or in reality, I don't know why we say that so often, on paper, this could be the fight of the year or the saddest fight that we have seen in a really long time. The firework potential here is great. You have Medeiros coming off of that great fight at UFC 218 against Alex Oliveira. That was really something else, back and forth. Both guys seem to be out of it at multiple points. On the other hand, you have Cowboy Cerrone, very popular fighter, very well-regarded fighter by many fans. But he's on a four-fight losing streak, and he did not look good in his last fight against Darren Till. Some of the other fights on his losing streak, you could sort of explain away in some ways. Masvidal really got to him early. Masvidal's a really good fighter. Him and Robbie Lawler duked it out. And the decision, some people had it for Cerrone, but it ended up going Lawler's way. But the Till fight was the fight that really seemed to make Darren Till in a lot of ways. Darren Till's been elevated from that fight, and a lot of people wanting to call out Darren Till. But it really seemed like Cowboy might really be on the decline. We never have time to process his losses very often because he fights so active. But that Darren Till fight was back in October. So by Cerrone's standards, this may actually be a long layoff. I'm going to take Medeiros here. I think it does turn into a four-fight losing streak for Cerrone, and I think the questions will continue. I don't think that it's going to stop him. I don't think anything will stop Donald Cerrone until maybe he gets cut from the UFC because of his activity. But I think Medeiros comes in here, gets the job done. I think the fight will be exciting for at least for a little while because it's not like Cerrone's going to fight tepid, but I think Medeiros gets a stoppage maybe in the second round. What do you think, Sean?
This is a tough one because I think Cerrone is probably going to win this fight, but it would not shock me. Again, I know it's kind of a cop out to keep going back to this, but it wouldn't shock me if Medeiros ends up winning this fight. But it seems to me like Medeiros is the kind of guy who is going to need an abundance of punishment to take Donald Cerrone out. He's not a one shot kind of guy, big power stuff like that, like Darren Till is. Or along those lines. So it seems like he's going to have to do a lot against Cerrone and really get after him for an extended period of time in order to get him out of there. And I think Cerrone is an offensive enough fighter, and his back is up against the wall at this point. If he's not completely shot here, I think he's going to be able to get the win. You know, Medeiros is beatable. He is stoppable. And I think Cerrone is going to be able to find that chin and either hurt him and submit him or get that knockout.
Zach, break the tie here. Cerrone or Medeiros?
I'm going with Medeiros for sure. I really, just based on Cerrone's activity, I just haven't seen enough of him. I mean, I know historically he's a tremendous fighter and has had a hell of a career, but in the recent past, there's just nothing in his fights that tell me he can win again. So I'm not touching him in this one with a 10-foot pole. I think we've seen what Medeiros can do. I think he can. He doesn't have that one punch, knockout power that other fighters have, but he can bring it. He can smother you and hit you with just a flurry of stuff from every which direction. I think in this fight he's gonna
use that Swarm Cerrone and win the thing. In addition, you know, I think Medeiros has a pretty decent chin, and I'm not confident that Cerrone can do enough damage to really hurt him before he gets hurt himself. So I'm staying far away from Cerrone on this one and going with Medeiros.
Now, also this weekend, it's weird. We got an event on a Friday, an event on a Sunday, but no major MMA on a Saturday. So if you're a person that totally forsakes your social life for MMA, you finally have a Saturday night free this week. Bellator 194 will come to you on Friday night. Pretty decent card. Not a ton of great fights, but a ton of names. You know, Heather Hardy going to be in her third fight. You have a Liam McGarry, a Pitbull Brothers fighting. But in the main event, you got another fight in the heavyweight Grand Prix. So far, everything has stayed intact, so I'm going to knock on the wood on my desk and hope that that's how it stays. But you have a rematch of sorts of Matt Mitrione taking on Roy Nelson. Of course, they met way back in December of 2012 with Matt Mitrione getting the victory what seemed like another lifetime ago. Roy Nelson getting the victory, but TKO due to punches. That seems like a really long time ago. Both men's careers have taken a lot of turns. They both obviously have migrated to Bellator, and they're two of, you might say, the young and spry heavyweights in Bellator, even the two guys that are in their 40s, but that's just kind of how things go in Bellator. This is one of the fights that we predicted, just like all of them, in our bracketology we did a couple weeks ago. So for the sake of posterity, we had Matt Mitrione taking out Roy Big Country Nelson here. Zach, is that how it's going to go? Are we going to stick to our bracket prediction?
Yeah, I'm sticking with mine. I was confident about that pick back when we made it, and I'm sticking with it, confident with that pick today.
Sean, are we going Mitrione still here?
Yeah, 100%.
And I was the dissenting voice picking Roy Nelson. So if he wins, I'm just going to cross it out on the bracket and put my initials next to it, noting that I did pick him. So we have two of the first four fights will be underway. Hopefully this fight happens. You never know, obviously, with the way things go. But this should be a fun fight. Bellator is not the greatest promotion in the world, but it generally can be fun when you have fighters that you have a general knowledge on. So I think it'll be a fun affair on a Friday night, and hopefully it's a long weekend for a lot of people. So that'd be a good way to kick off the weekend for those of us lucky enough to have that off on Monday. All right, let's go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a little fun. We got a quick round of Fact or Fiction, and we also have a brand new segment to the show, so stay tuned.
No matter what kind of wrestling fan you are, Ring Rust Radio is the perfect podcast for you. Every Wednesday night, Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest news in professional wrestling, including Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-view reviews. That isn't all, as Ring Rust Radio also delves into NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan to discuss the latest happenings in every major company. Ring Rust Radio conducts interviews with the biggest stars in the wrestling business as well, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, and many more. If you're looking for your wrestling fix with an entertaining twist, check out Ring Rust Radio every week on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, guys, let's play a quick round of Fact or Fiction. Just two easy questions, but they're kind of fun. This is the segment we'd like to have fun with on some weeks, and some weeks it can be very serious, but this is going to be on the lighter side, so just a fair warning. Now, as this game works, it's very simple. I ask one of my co-hosts a question, and they answer if that question is fact or fiction. We'll start with Sean. Sean, Tyron Woodley is more trustworthy than Dana White. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact, and I'm going to say fact in the same vein that I would say it with anyone else. That you could say blank is more trustworthy than Dana White, and I would probably say fact. So I'm going to go with Tyron Woodley, yes.
Zach, fact or fiction on the more trustworthy guy?
100% fact, and for the exact same reason that Sean said. Anybody more trustworthy than Dana White at this point, And, you know, just I just tend to side with fighters on these kinds of things out of just pure admiration and respect for them. So, fact.
And obviously I'm going to say fact as well. And I'll give Woodley a little credit. I think to his detriment, he is honest most of the time. And sometimes that's why fans and the promotion doesn't always like him, because he just kind of tells it like it is. And sometimes like it is can be very uninspiring. But I have one follow-up question, and I'll start with Sean. Is Dana White the public figure that's not directly involved in politics that has the least credibility of anybody?
You know, I would say the promoter in general, you know, whether it's Bob Arum or any of those guys, they're all pretty much on the same level as far as trustworthiness. So I'll say yes, as a kind of a de facto fact, that he is, but he's also grouped in with the other promoters.
Well, and see that, you know, I didn't want him to be compared to politicians, because if you went down that road, you could find about 8,000 people that are equal or lesser credibility. But you brought up the other slimiest segment of society there, Sean. Like when you think of Bob Arum or even Don King back in the day, some of those guys. Yeah, Dana White seems like a great guy and a credible guy and a guy that probably is telling you the truth. Unlike those guys, Dana White, too, has like a legion of fans that will defend him. I don't know if there's any Bob Arum marks out there, so that is something to consider for sure.
Yeah.
All right. One more, and this one was a much funner when I wrote it out, being given what's followed. All right, Zach. Fact or fiction? Booker T would defeat Corey Graves in unregulated MMA. So, like, UFC 4, would Booker T just take out Corey Graves?
Fact, absolutely. I mean, he's like 2-3 times his size, and you know, Booker has some legitimate, you know, street fighting background in him. That's not a dude I would mess with. And you know, look, I know what happened and what really went down in this situation, but there's no way Corey Graves stands a chance. Fact, Booker T all the way.
Yeah, if this really was a work, I am so sad, because I wanted nothing more in the world than to believe that Booker T and Corey Graves hated each other. I don't know why. I'm a sick individual, I guess. But, you know, it's kind of the classic thing of pro wrestling, that, you know, make them believe that, oh, all this stuff's a work, but maybe that's real. Sean, fact or fiction on Booker T just taking out Corey Graves in Pride?
Yeah, absolutely fact. I mean, there's something that Jordan Breen used to say a lot, is that, well, for a lot of these fighters, you know, the intangible is that they're hard people, and Booker T is a hard dude. And I don't know that the same can be said about Corey Graves. All respect to him. I think Booker T wins it on pure hardness.
Yeah, look, Booker T is from the generation of guys that were brought up in, like, the Bill Watts system, that if you lost a fight in a bar, you'd be fired from the promotion. So I'm sure Booker T and his legitimate upbringing, which was very rough and it isn't really something to poke fun at. But, yeah, Booker T would wipe the floor with that hipster Corey Graves. Sadly, they appear to be friends, which is it really got to me in a way that I didn't think it would affect me. And talking about it publicly just seems to make it worse. So I'm going to move on. But you brought up Jordan Breen. I think that's a halfway decent segue over here. So let's talk about some bearded mixed martial arts journalists. Now, Jordan Breen actually knows a lot about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, so he's not what this segment's about. But this is going to be a news segment that we're going to talk about whenever something comes up where the MMA journalist or the MMA fan just gets so mad that pro wrestling is being injected into their precious MMA. And we're going to read you either a tweet or an online comment regarding such things. So if you see something throughout the week, send it our way, MMALivecast@gmail.com. Now, remember, we are a family-friendly podcast over here, so if it's something just too out there, we can't really read it. There's some editing we can do, but we want the full context to be read. And so, of course, for the inaugural edition of this segment, who better than the often annoyed Luke Thomas to be the first inductee into Pro Wrestling Makes MMA Guy Mad? His tweet came from Sunday, and of course, it is his favorite topic in the world. Here was the tweet that he thumbed out on Saturday night during UFC 221. Quote, Hearing the wooing in Australia tonight makes me glad the coral reef is dying in the Great Barrier Reef. End quote. Leave it to Luke Thomas to throw out such a trolly tweet that actually has you have to go to Wikipedia and see what the issue is with the dying Great Barrier Reef in Australia. But this brings up a much broader topic that I feel our podcast is the only one really responsible and stupid enough to comment on, the woos in MMA. Sean, what's your overall feeling on every MMA card in the last, like, 6 months turning into a woo fest?
I hate it very much. I'll put it that way. I'm a fan of Ric Flair, just like any other self-respecting wrestling fan. But having the crowd emulate Ric Flair for no apparent reason is really annoying. So I don't know that I promote the denigrating of the Great Coral Reef, but I don't like the wooing.
Yeah, I can't wait till next year when they do a card on the North Pole and, like, Luke Thomas sort of starts promoting the melting of the glaciers thanks to woos. Zach, give us the definitive word on wooing at MMA events.
Here's the thing with it. I don't like it either, but I also just don't understand it. Like, there's no, you know...
Right, exactly.
It makes no sense. I mean, There's just no reason for it. I mean, it's not like these guys in the cage are throwing chops to the chest that are eliciting this insanity of a reaction from audiences all around the world. It's just there's absolutely no reason for it. Now, I will say, so I hate it also. It doesn't make any sense. I roll my eyes and I really find myself sitting there trying to think, okay, what am I missing here? What did I miss that they all saw that elicited this crazy chant? But for what it's worth, thank goodness it's not the what chant, because I probably would have to turn it off if that starts eking its way into UFC broadcast.
Oh, man. Can you imagine what? What's just the, like during the post-fight promo and poor John Attic is up there like asking the guy what his next fight is and he's talking to the translator and there's a what in between all of that. So then I would have to join the chorus. I like the woos for no other reason than the troll job they do to people and the anger they elicit. It was like about 5 years ago in college basketball when every team was rushing the court after a big victory and the college basketball writers were just like losing their mind about that. Or in pro wrestling punditry, the way the "This is awesome" chant seems to trigger pro wrestling journalists like nothing else in the world. So I like the woos for that. I'll agree with you. They serve no purpose. Nobody's chopping anybody. Nobody's getting in a figure four. Nobody's suffering from chronic bankruptcy in the middle of a fight. So I don't understand why they're happening. But they are fun to do. If you've ever been in a situation, I was at a factory one time just working and a woo broke out. And I don't know if anybody in that whole place had ever heard of Ric Flair. I think one person just started wooing and they're contagious. They're like yawns. So, I mean, I'm glad we're covering the important stuff in pro wrestling and MMA this week. But like I said, if you have a nomination for Pro Wrestling Makes MMA Guy Mad, please send it away because this is it's a fun exercise in the Twitterverse, especially now with the Ronda Rousey news. Last week we talked about on the MMA beat and their discussion on Ronda Rousey. If you go to the YouTube comment section, which, I mean, why would anybody go to the YouTube comment section? It's pretty much the bottom barrel of society these days. But if you go there and the anger they have for the very peripheral discussion on Ronda Rousey in the WWE, it is amazing. So I cannot wait till this CM Punk fight in Chicago gets booked, just so we're going to have excess amount of gold on that segment. Guys, I think has officially gone off the rails. We are, I don't know where we're at. I don't know where we're started. So this would probably be a good time to ride off into the sunset. But before we do so, Sean, can you give us a bit of a live report from the Eagles parade? Because you witnessed a heck of a promo this week at this past Thursday. Tell us what that promo was like.
Oh man, I tell you, I was there. Let's see, we left the house at 4 a.m. that morning and got home about 6:30 p.m. And that being there live for that promo made the whole thing worth it. It was great. You know, being in the crowd when Jason Kelce gave that promo was awesome. I was telling these guys before the show started that's been the only time in the last 15 or so years that I've approved of the what chant being used, because it works so well with that particular situation. But yeah, Jason Kelce channeling Stone Cold Steve Austin like very few have been able to do over the course of the last several years. Perhaps it had something to do with the imbibing he did on the way to the podium from the other end of town on the parade. But it was great stuff. It was a lot of fun being at the parade. And hopefully we get to do it again in fewer than 58 years.
Great. And how can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at Sean Ennis. I tweet about MMA, pro wrestling, and Philly sports. I'm starting to quiet down on the Eagles front now, although I do have my occasional outbursts from time to time, just because, you know, it's just I'm not used to being this happy at the end of a football season. So, you know, you got to give me a little bit of a little bit of slack on that. But that's where you can follow me, at Sean Ennis, S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S.
Well, I like how watching pro wrestling and MMA can counterbalance the happiness that you feel from watching the Eagles. So I'm glad that's there in your life. And Zach, you've been on a few podcasts on the Torch Network in the last couple of days, and you've got a column on PW Torch that seemed to be very well received. Why don't you plug any of that, and also how can we follow you on social media?
So yeah, follow me on Twitter at ZHeyDorn, at ZHeyDorn, 99.9% pro wrestling and MMA related tweets there. And yeah, also check out the new column up on PW Torch right now. It's called Artistry of Wrestling. It's a weekly column that I do for the site that takes a current event, current happening in the world of professional wrestling. Usually it's WWE related, but it doesn't have to be. And I do a deep dive into the art of whatever that current event is. This week it was the Usos promo on SmackDown. Thought it was just a heck of a promo and a lot of great artistic elements as it pertains to pro wrestling involved in it. So just do a deep analysis of that. That's a weekly column that comes out either late Friday night or early Saturday morning. And then also the 205 Live beat guy for the Torch as well. And with some much needed and long overdue changes to that show, it seems, it should get pretty exciting here up in the run to WrestleMania. And then, of course, all the stuff for MMATorch.com weekly column comes out on Thursday with just a take on something, current event, a fight, fight card, et cetera, in the world of MMA. And then go check out Wrestling Night in America last night. I was a guest with Greg Parks, and we just broke down just everything in pro wrestling. Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the build to Elimination Chamber and Fastlane. We made a dent in everything, so you can check that out. A fellow PW Torch livecast show is up for your enjoyment now.
And you can follow me on Twitter, Rob N. Vallejos. I won't give a percentage on how much of my stuff is pro wrestling and MMA related because I haven't tweeted a lot lately, so I think that percentage would be relatively low. So, but I need to step my game up, and hopefully I will here pretty soon. As always, follow the brand on Twitter, at MMA Torch. Go to MMA Torch. We have a brand new news writer up on the site. Got some really big credentials. We're going to hope he's going to do really well for the site, bringing you the news in a timely fashion. And don't forget to follow all of the Torch brands. PW Podcasts, PW Torch Livecast, PW Torch, PW Torch VIP. Great time to go through back issues. We get into WrestleMania season. Go look back at what has happened for the last 30 years of professional wrestling. So before I send you off, I'll give another plug for that VIP, let you hear a little message about it, and then we are out of here for this week. So for Zach and Sean, I am Robert, and we will see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004 plus, tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s, but you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.